Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience with Darren and Mark and a special guest.
Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience podcast series. Each of these podcasts is going to explore a different element of the fan experience and fan engagement. Some will look at the match day experience while others will explore more broader themes. But every one of these podcasts is going to deliver value to anyone listening in football or indeed any other spectator sport. Whether it's general advice you need or ways to help you start a conversation with your own colleagues, we reckon a regular dose of the fan experience will make a difference. So join me, Mark.
And me, Darren, as we explore ways of improving the match day experience, making clubs more sustainable, relying a little less on winning to keep fans engaged.
And of course, if you want to find out more about us, the Fan Experience Company, and the work we do, please check out www.fanexperienceco.com, where you'll find all of that information. So we're back again, and this time we're looking at first impressions. This is one of the podcasts that looks at a part of the match day experience. And first impressions is really important. I mean, Darren and I, as we do our assessments around Europe at local level, at league level, at national level, and international level, the first impressions is a really important part. What do you say, Darren?
Well, I think it's one of the parts of the process that's completely underestimated. When a fan is thinking about going to a football game at any level, one of the first things they're going to do is just go straight on the website. And it, you can really tell the difference between a club that understands that and builds the whole website into their fan engagement process and a club that doesn't quite think about it enough. And
yeah, I think you're right, especially if we look at the kind of the post-COVID period as well, because, you know, one of the things you and I have been encouraging clubs to do is to diversify and to recognize, especially some of the smaller clubs, that they actually have assets that are worth something to the local community, you know, the social club, meet new people, you know, to the ability to park for free, and yet they don't put this on the website. Oh, you know, we've always been advocates of...
It's amazing how many really important things that the fans should know about, could know about, don't actually get included on websites, and therefore if they're not on websites, they're not going to find their way onto social media, and basically most fans will turn up at games not knowing anything about what they're going to find when they get there.
Quite right, and even when you think of groups such as families with children, the kids might want to go to the game, the parents might not have been to a game of football before, so there's a degree of reassurance that's going to be required in that on that website. So it could be that there is a fan guide, as a match day schedule, but just something that, you know, let's not make assumptions. Not everybody understands what a match day will bring. Most of us recognize that if we're going to grow our clubs, only part of that can come from lapsed fans and from existing fans renewing. We need to widen our focus. We need to think diversification, and we need to focus very, very strongly on the first impressions.
When we see a really good fan guide, and you know, let's be honest, some clubs do it fantastically well. But when you see a really great fan guide that sort of breaks down all the various part, all the touch points, all the various parts of the supporter's journey on a match day, and gives them things like timetables of events, explanations of what kind of food and drink is available at the stadium and where to find it, information on any activities available, it completely transforms the experience, because no fan can then miss anything because it's all there in front of them.
You're absolutely right. And again, you know, I must stress, post-COVID, you know, we're going to have to do this. You know, we often talk about the difficulties football has in being fan-focused. You know, it's not in its DNA. Football is about winning. Disney's about delighting kids and delighting people. And we're only going to get a shift to that if we have some kind of, you know, large trauma. We've got that now. We've got, you know, we've got COVID. We're going to have to think differently. We're going to have to start again. We're going to have to stop thinking only about our existing audience and start thinking about other ones too. And I think you're right. That's where
if you think about it, post-COVID, fans are going to need to have far more information than they've ever had before. So if there is restrictions in place, if there is different things happening that, you wouldn't normally find it a football game. Fans are going to need to know about that. And again, where's the first place they're going to look? On the website and on social media, find out what the club's doing.
Okay, well, listen, thanks for that, Darren. We've got a special guest, as we have on all of these episodes. And we're delighted to introduce Ante Cicveric from the Croatian Federation. Ante, you're head of marketing there, aren't you?
Yes, yes, yes. Hi, Mark. Hi, Darren. Nice to be here with you.
Well, it's great to have you here, especially as you're representing currently the second best national team in the world. Congratulations on the silver medal in 2018.
Thank you.
Well, we know Croatia is probably the country, if not one of the top two, where football is so passionately loved. I mean, to the point that it starts to become difficult to manage. You know, to those of us outside of Croatia, you know, we don't just think of the, I mean, obviously the iconic kit, the shirt, which is obviously so unique. We think about, you know, some of the dazzling players. Your current president of the association, Davor Šuker, you know, we still remember him back in 96 with that audacious chip at Hillsborough. Just a wonderful, wonderful player. But when we also think about Croatia, we think about the huge rivalries between the fans and some of the security and safety challenges you have. So in an environment like that, how easy is it for you as the marketing head to actually get new people to attend matches?
First of all, I would like to say thank you for remembering me those beautiful times. Even 22 years ago, we were still like, even as a young country back then, yeah, we were still a force to reckon, as you would say in Britain.
Well, that was it. I mean, that's when you first kind of, launched upon the world, wasn't it? France 98.
And everybody it was Euro 96.
Oh, of course. This, yeah. 2 years.
Yeah, previous. With this chip over Šuker's chip over Peter Schmeichel.
Yeah.
Which at the time, Denmark was the European winners from 92.
So yeah, and of course, there's a bizarre connection because they were only in that competition.
Yeah, because Yugoslavia.
Former Yugoslavia, yeah.
So the thing is with Croatia, we say, we would put it like this. So we are still a young country. All the sports people in Croatia, so the football players, basketball players, tennis players, handball players, they start playing sports, obviously, like when they're really young. And as soon as they become good, obviously, they start to represent their national country. The country, like on the national level, yeah. And as soon as the results come, this sports becomes popular in public. So the wider range of public starts following the sport because of the results first.
Yeah.
And over the time, we are famous to have a quite big national. How would I say it in English? Like the national pride, you know, for representing.
Yes, exactly. Exactly the phrase. Yeah.
Yeah, the country. So it becomes like a cultural thing throughout the time. But as the time goes by, obviously the generation changes. So in the newer times, it's more and more connected with the trend. And the trend is, of course, if you're winning, everybody loves you, everybody supports you. The minute you start going in the opposite direction, the interest goes down. The interest for you goes down. Luckily, for the national team, we haven't had a problem since we gained our independence, because obviously we were always good. We were participants for 11 out of 13 major tournaments. So we didn't qualify only for the two. So obviously, every time when there is a major tournament, everybody wants to follow the national team. The bigger problem we have with the league itself, it doesn't have the support as the national team. We have the problems with the stadiums. We have the problems with the infrastructure. And people tend to follow clubs only when they're playing big European matches.
I see.
And this is somehow also because when the team plays the big European match, it becomes like a social event.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to be the part of the social event. So, for example, you have on Thursday, you have a quarterfinal of the Europa League. And on the stadium of capacity of 35,000, you need an extra ticket. Mm-hmm. 3 days later, the same team, Dinamo Zagreb, plays against the third team in Croatian division. So it's a derby on the same stadium. And it's like maybe 5,000 to 10,000 people interested to come. So basically watching the same team, but the different environment. So no, we're not interested in that. We were interested in European because it was like more like high, it was posh, it was in, you know, it was cool to be the part of it. So
how do you bridge that gap then, Ante? How do you get the clubs to get fans to feel the same about league games as they do?
Yeah, so obviously this part of the job is on the clubs themselves. So basically all the clubs have, what I have seen in the recent years, they have invested in their marketing strategy for that part as well. They have been, you know, looking what the other clubs, famous clubs such as Real, Barcelona, Man United, what are they doing? And they're trying, you know, to copy the stuff that are possible, obviously. And hoping, yeah, that being on the football game will be like the cool thing to do. So as I see, they are trying to push into that direction, but obviously it takes time, you know.
Yeah, because one of the things that, you know, I always think with first impressions, for example, if you're trying to attract new people, is that before they even think about coming to games, there has to be an awareness. So you have to build up an understanding that what the club's about, what's happening on match days, long before people actually come to the stadium. So are clubs able to do that? Is that work that the clubs?
They are doing this through their marketing channels. You know, like producing the content for the social media. You know, including the first team players, including the video makers. And stuff like that, you know, in order to present how cool the club is and how much fun can you have by coming and support it. And like, they want you to feel that you belong to the club.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I think one of the things, I think it's fair to say, isn't it, that as a federation, you, obviously the Croatian FA is not one of the bigger federations.
Yeah.
I guess, in terms of funding and resources, you won't have as many people. So I guess there has to be a lot of creativity.
Yes, exactly. That's always the big issue regarding the... because, like, you know, that Croatian clubs... so when you see the revenue structure of the Croatian clubs, more than 85% of the funding comes from the transfers of the players and from the UEFA awards if you participate in the competition. Yeah. So basically all the stuff such as TV rights, such as tickets, such as merchandising, they are, I would say, like irrelevant for most of the league, you know? And that's always the problem, you know, to convince the people who are in charge that you should invest in parts other than the first team or the youth team or footballing team in general, in order for you to open up some new revenue streams and some new possibilities, you know, for the future, right?
Yeah. And I guess that comes into what you said about the stadiums. You know, that's one of the
issues.
Because if you get experience, I guess you need things around the stadium to be able
It's so funny because, like, since you mentioned now, we are currently the silver medalists from the last World Cup. So obviously we have such a high profile team with all the stars playing for the biggest clubs in the world. So a lot of times, you know, when we play the qualifying games here in Croatia, our guests who are visiting and playing against us, they come here and then they look at our stadiums, they look at our infrastructure and they're like, man, like, is this for real? Like, how come that from here you have achieved that in Russia? People can't believe, you know, sometimes when they see it, especially in the 2019, this was the first year that we as a federation decided that the national team will play all the games, domestic games, which was total six, in six different cities all around Croatia. So that we give the opportunity for all the Croatian people from all the regions, from all the cities to feel like the part of the football team.
I think what's remarkable, Ante, what's remarkable though is that what's the population of Croatia? About 4 million?
4 million, yeah, 4 million.
Yeah, I mean, that's astonishing when you think how well, you know, I mean, people talk about Iceland and, you know, the impact Iceland had. And it's possibly because of that, you know, that clapping celebration they did.
That's what made the difference.
I mean, just, you know, four million, because Serbia is much bigger than Croatia, isn't it, in terms of population. And it, so it really is a tiny country. And as you've said before, sport is kind of the way it presents itself to the world, isn't it? And it's, as Darren was saying, such a difference then, and such a challenge to get people to come into those games. What are government perceptions? Because in parts of Europe we work in, often the biggest challenge is external perceptions. You know, people think football is a hotbed of bad behavior and corruption.
Yeah, but like, you know, that football in Croatia is a really important tool, but it's quite controversial, you know, as well, because the government. We would like them to participate more, not only in football, but in sports in general. Because I think that there have been some research regarding how much is the investment in sports from each government in the European Union compared to the GDP of the country. And I think that we came last or second to last. Yeah. So, yeah, obviously, like, the government is not doing enough, even like with the Football National Association. So we actually provide for ourselves. We finance completely on our own. So with the sponsors and the UEFA TV rights, UEFA stuff. So obviously, like, the government cannot, you know, influence a lot into decision making within the federation, because obviously you're not providing the funding.
Which is quite incredible when you think of...
Yeah.
You think that a government would want to really be part of such a great success story. You'd imagine that they'd be all over it. That's quite astonishing.
You know, I always look at it in a way that... So sports is one of the branches of the country, okay? Yeah. So the government has probably a lot of things to think about, a lot of things to do, a lot of, you know, problems to deal with. So sports is just one of the things they should be dealing with. And, you know, the time goes by so quickly, and sometimes you think you're helping, sometimes, but it's not going obviously fast enough. And everybody's always, you know, feeling that they are neglected. So if you help sports, then the people say, okay, why don't we have more hospitals, more kindergartens? So it's always those political questions that come in the center.
They probably think they're doing quite well on their own, to be honest, so let's not interfere too much. But one of the things I was looking at some articles online in preparation for the podcast, Ante, and there was some I couldn't believe how many times the word family cropped up.
It was the hashtag created by the marketing and the communication team before I arrived in the federation. So it was like the hashtag family, which should represent, you know, that all the Croatian national team and the fans, football fans, should be like one big family to encourage, you know, families to come for the games. So players are family, coaches are family. Grandmothers, granddaughters, grandfathers, fathers, sons, everybody's like together. So we encourage that, and we also have received an award by UEFA from that, and it's all the credits goes to my colleagues from the communication department and the people from the marketing department prior my arrival.
That was the social media campaign, wasn't it?
So
that leads me on to another question that we face all the time, don't we, Mark, in terms of how to balance the needs of a family coming to a stadium against, shall we say, core fans who have got a very different reason for wanting to come. And, you know, we constantly have that question where clubs want to know if they can have fans who are very, you know, even ultras who are very active in the way that they support the club and have, you know, very passionate against a family who may have three generations of people there, including young children. How do you balance that out?
Basically, I can tell you the story about Split now, which Mark.
I've been dying to get this story to come across because this is the best.
Yeah. So basically, it goes like this: in Croatia, you have two big clubs. One is Dinamo Zagreb, the other one is Hajduk Split. So, Dinamo Zagreb is a club from the capital. You know, they have been champions since 2006. I think since 2006. Only 1 year has gone by that they haven't been champions. Obviously, the people from Split, which is on the coast, are feeling that everything that they're like Dinamo Zagreb is always protected, that everything goes to their favor. So that's like, it's been a big rivalry before, but in the last couple of years, it evolved even higher. You know? So, there has also been like a stigma over national team playing the games in Split, because actually before Hungary in October, we have only won one qualifying game in Split that we have played since 1994 there, right? So there was always like, oh, all the games are in Zagreb. Why does the national team doesn't want to come to Split? It's always Zagreb, Zagreb, Zagreb. And throughout the years, it developed that now the supporters of this team, Hajduk Split, which are the biggest ultras in the country, mm-hmm. are saying, okay, we support only Hajduk, but it's not that we don't care about the national team, but we don't like the national team and we hate the national team and we don't want national team to come to Split because we will make them not feeling welcome.
Yeah. Right.
And it was like huge, like build up in the media for the last couple of years. So you had an impression that if the national team goes to Split, then nobody will come to the stadium to support them because it's like, again, it's going to be bad. And if you're going to Split, you're looking for problems.
Right.
And basically, when you're speaking with the general public, if you ask them, do you want the team to go to Split? I think that more than 80% of the answers would be no, don't go to Split because there will be problems there.
Right.
So last year, obviously, we have decided no, let's go. We will play in each city one game. And of course, Split needs to be on the map as well for that game. And we chose Hungary, which was at the time probably like the most important game of the qualifying cycle. So first thing was this. When we sell tickets for the national team, then we decide to go only the part of the tickets go online. The other part goes live because, you know, there is a lot of older people who are not so used on the technology. So they don't know how to buy online and stuff like that. So they wish to stand in the line, you know, to get to the box office and to actually give the money and receive the piece of paper in return.
Yeah.
So obviously, like, the stadium is capacity like 33,000 and the tickets were sold out like in a two and a half hours.
Wow.
And this was like, okay, people. So on one side, you're telling me we are not welcome here. On the other side, people can't wait to see the national team. So basically, what was the conclusion of this? The conclusion is that you have the ultras, who is maybe like a group of like 500, 1,000, like deeply, deeply, you know, ultras. And they are like really loud. So with their voice, you could mistake that the entire region thinks like that.
Yeah,
but in the same time, you have the general public who lives in this area and who loves the national team and who obviously can't wait to see Luka Modric, to see Ivan Perisic, to see Ivan Rakitic live playing for the national team. And obviously, like, the stadium was, the game started at 8:45. Already at 7:45, the stadium was like completely full. Everybody were singing. The atmosphere was like far best for the last couple of years. And this was like the supreme kick into their beliefs.
What was the score, Anthony? Because that's the thing that I can't find out.
We won 3-0.
Oh wow, great! So the curse was lifted.
Yeah, no. Like, the and I spoke to the players afterwards, and they were like, man, like, I remember Modric was saying, like, I'm a little nervous. You imagine, like, Luka Modric, after winning four Champions Leagues, being the best for Ballon d'Or, being the best player of the World Cup, he says no. Because, you know, they understand what does it mean to play in Split.
Mm-hmm. You know? Are you going back again there soon, once we get football back again?
We still haven't had the schedule for the upcoming games. We have the three home games. We should be having three home games until the end of the year, the League of Nations games. And obviously, we will play them like... now everything is complicated because of Corona, but for sure, Split... I truly believe that Split should be one of the three cities that will host at least one game.
Well, it sounds like that whole experience is a turning point, isn't it, for unifying support across the country for the national team. And, you know, as Darren and I have both observed, you know, a country with 4 million people, silver medalists at the last World Cup, and obviously, you know, beating that England side on the way there.
we'd managed to go all this conversation without that semi-final coming up, and you have to bring it up, didn't you?
Well, yeah. This is what football's about. And that's the fact that...
Sorry, just one more input from my side. Since I've been following English football, obviously. And my impression is that if you compare Croatia and England, I think that the fans over there are much more passionate about their clubs compared to Croatia, where the passion is all about the national team.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, this also, and because like I have spoke to Mark, and I told him that I've seen this Sunderland Till I Die serial.
Thank you. And it's essential viewing. I appreciate that, Auntie.
Yeah. And it's I mean, it's amazing, you know, to see the club from the Premier League dropping down in the third division. And when you see the people in the series mentioning the numbers, the fans, the capacities, the revenues. It's miles away from Croatian first division, for example. So I think Dinamo Zagreb is the only team in the Croatia that would have a bigger budget than Sunderland, for example. No. And imagine even though they're playing now in a League One.
I'm not even sure we've got any budget right now. But no, that's good. I mean, Darren, you got any last comments you want to add about your experience of? Croatia and what we've discovered?
I think it's just fascinating, and the national team has such a priority with fans. You know, we're used to living in a country where a lot of people put club before country, you know, and it was, we talked quite a bit about the World Cup in Russia, but that was probably one of the first times that people really started to re-engage with the England national team for quite a while. So I think it's incredible how there's such a difference between perhaps the fans' attitude to clubs in both countries and how different it is. And I guess there's things we can learn from each other on that one.
Time for the roundup.
So it's the roundup, and we've been talking to Ante about passion. When you think of Croatia and the national passion for sport they have there, and the passion that's associated with the fans there. You know, we talked about Split, we talked about Zagreb, and we've got a story for the roundup that's also about passion. Back in, I think it was 2012, when Andres Iniesta scored that iconic goal at Chelsea. So many people will remember that goal. I mean, obviously Chelsea fans won't remember it with much joy, but the rest of us will remember the joy. And there was so much joy back in Barcelona that there was actually a spike in the birth rate in Catalonia 9 months later. So today, to mark the anniversary, Iniesta is actually phoning up some of his new kids to say happy birthday. I think that's just a wonderful story. I had no idea that, you know, when Barcelona pulls something off like that, then, you know, there is passion everywhere. And then children are appearing 9 months later. I don't think we're going to beat that as a roundup item anytime soon, Darren. What do you think?
I don't quite know how to even respond to that. I'm just wondering how he started the phone call.
Well, the speculation that it was Happy Conception Day, you know, rather than Happy Birthday, but, you know. Well, hey, this is what football is, isn't it? It does crazy things when it's, you know, when it means so much to you. It's amazing, you know, not only what fans will do, but we're now beginning to see national associations, clubs, and administrators really get to grips with that and understand that. So I think that's a a lovely story. So that brings us to the end of this podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it. We hope you'll join us next time.
Yeah, thank you everyone for listening, and thank you, Antti, for joining us and giving us the benefits of what the Croatian FA are doing and how important first impressions are at all levels of football.
Sure. It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure to participate, and thank you for the invite. And I wish you a lot of luck with your future projects.
Thank you very much, Antti. Take care, everyone, and we'll see you soon.
And don't forget to check out our new website at fanexperienceco.com. The Fan Experience was recorded live. See you next time.